Hello and welcome to Casting Nets Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Will Harley. I'm with the wonderful and always gorgeous Don Winsberger, who is hailing from the basement of his humble abode. His wife got sick of him and kicked him downstairs. Finally, I've been waiting for this moment forever and ever. Now we're both in the basement as we do our show today. And so, you know, it's good to be down here without any light to shine on our conversation. As we go forward today, we are tackling probably a topic that is charged in our communities, charged in our world today, and we are not intending in any way to add to the charge, but we want to be clear in what we're doing. Today we are going to be tackling the topic of racism and looking at where it began, and then moving forward with the idea of looking at what is it that the Lord provides to conquer this mindset of the sinful nature that would do nothing but try to divide us. And so as we go forward with this, please be reminded that the views and the opinions that we are sharing are just our conversations, just our musings. They are not necessarily the views and the opinions of our called church bodies, nor are they the views and the opinions necessarily of the synod of which we are a part, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. If you would like to have a conversation with us, please contact us either through our congregations or contact us through our website, and you can get a hold of us. If you don't like what we have to say, you have every right to disagree and shut us off. There is no need for rude remarks. There's no need for things of that nature. We're all adults, and we know how to practice self-control, and we know that if I don't like something, I can just not associate with it. So keep that in mind as we go forward in our conversation for today. And so without further ado, let's maybe roll into that conversation. Trying a little lighthearted music to sort of lighten the mood here for us.
I noticed that. I was just thinking to myself, that part of my nature is in a tense situation to try to bring humor in to lighten it up. I am not going to do that for this topic of conversation.
So you're not going to bring any lightheaded light sense of humor, huh? We're going to go dark.
You know what? It's a serious matter, I think it's important for all of us with this to talk about it, to discuss about it, try to keep our emotions in its check as much as possible, and at least come to a solution about it. I mean, maybe the closest, and I'm not even joking about this, but I happen to think about it 30 years ago. And I don't know, you were probably too young to remember this, my dear brother in the ministry. 1994 or 1992 with the LA riots and Rodney King.
Sure, I remember.
And Rodney King afterwards, with all of the uproar that came up after it, made the comment, "Can't we all just get along?" And whether you agreed with Rodney or liked Rodney King, whatever side you fell on the issue back then, I have to say I'm thinking many of the things that Rodney King is thinking here. Let's all try to get along. Let's all try to get along.
Well, and that's the problem, right? Because we're finding every reason to not get along. I mean, we're reaching deep down into things that shouldn't be issues to bring out so that we have another excuse to not get along, another excuse to put ourselves in a position over someone else. I think that's really, I mean, when you're looking at a lot of what's going on today, that's really what's going on is, which is the typical aspect of the sinful nature. I want my opinion. I want my desires, my wants to triumph over someone else's wants and desires, right? That's the sinful nature at its peak and pinnacle. Now, the problem is that if you get other like-minded people who can join in with that, that creates this atmosphere, this very charged atmosphere of they versus us or them versus us. And then what happens after, and what we fail to realize is after all that settles down, there's going to be infighting within those other groups too, because who now is going to be the one who gets their way. So there's always going to be this tension because we're all sinners and we're all sinful people. And we are looking for a point and a purpose to find a disagreement with others. But the point of what we're talking about today is this concept of races, the concept of racism. And so probably what we'd want to understand, at least from where we're coming from, and maybe you can help flesh this out too, Don, when we say racism, we sort of got to unpack that word today, because I don't know if anybody really understands what it means, right? To what racism truly is, or maybe even understand what races are, you know, what the races are. And so maybe we need to unpack some of these terms before we jump on into some of our lessons from Scripture to see where a lot of this has come from.
You know, there has been at least, I'm 58 years old. I'm approaching six decades on this planet. Grew up during some of the most, the biggest times of racial unrest in our country in the 1960s. I had heard many religious leaders, many different political activists, but especially coming from religious leaders, and even hearing it come from our own professors at our own seminary, really, there's one race, it's the human race. And I think that that is something that quite a few people can agree on. The skin color may be different, but it's still the same. It's still the same DNA. It's still the same blood type. Pinch me and I hurt. Hurt me, do I not cry? All of that. We're all part of the human race.
And I would agree. But
I'm feeding you here. Take off with that.
All right. Well, I think, and we need to talk about that. We need to talk about the fact that, you know, really we are all one person. I mean, if you are African American, if you're a Native American, if you are European American, if you are you know, Asian American, whatever your cultural group that you would associate with. I mean, you still have, you know, 10 fingers, 10 toes. You still have arms, legs. You still bleed red. You still have the same internal system that I have. You still have the same, ideas, thoughts, and abilities to think and learn and grow as I do. So, I mean, that idea of saying that we are just one person or people, you know.
One people.
Yeah, we're one people. But when we talk about racism, I think going back to the actual definition of what it is might help us a little bit in the sense of understanding what this is. Going on, just Googling a definition of it probably gets you as close as anybody's going to get. It's a prejudice, a discrimination, an antagonism directed against a person or a people on the basis of their membership of a particular racial or ethnic group, typically one that is a minority or a marginalized group. So you have this idea of a prejudice or a discrimination, really, and we're making it about color in our society today, but I think it goes beyond that. I think really what we're finding out, especially in today's society, is that racism, as people are using it, is really heavily loaded towards the cultural. Really, that I think that's where it is. I think it's heavily focused towards the cultural. I was watching Facebook this morning. I don't know, sometimes watching Facebook videos is not a really good thing to do, but I was watching some Facebook things this morning, and that was what was brought out. They had a discussion between two African-American people on this particular feed, and one of them said, well, you know, the systematic racism that's loaded towards whites, you know, and it was saying how the people who are considered white have better families where the husbands are staying in the marriage, and we have children who are being raised with their fathers, and we have, and the list can go on and on. And the Southern African American said, but that's not racism because they have that. It's because they're working for it. And he said, we can have that too. And I think this is where we're starting to find, maybe in this, what's happening in our culture today, what's happening right now is we're finding that really the divide is not between somebody who has more melanin and is darker of skin and someone who has less melanin, who's lighter of skin. It's really not the difference between the light and dark skin. It's the difference between the cultural aspects that we carry with us, right? And most likely revolving in that cultural aspect, the spiritual aspect that we carry, the religious aspect that comes with it.
That's very deep, but it's very true. This is going to be a hard one to put, actually, to really narrow down, because as you were talking, and I'm thinking, I just think about it in a matter of how many synonyms we could come up to describe racism. Okay, if we had actually had probably the latest thesaurus, and I think it changes every day, things that could come in to qualify that. You could come up with words like hatred. You could come up with words like stereotype. You could come up with terms like privilege. It's just a big soup and stew of ideas and words. I don't think that our society at this point in time really has a good understanding of the word of the whole concept either.
Well, and I don't think they will as long as we stay as charged as we are, because right now we're, and you said it so profoundly, all of these are ideas, right? And yeah, everybody's throwing out an idea, and the newest idea sends just this electrical jolt right down the national conscience. I'm going to call it the national conscience. It sends this jolt down the national conscience, and everybody reacts without actually stopping, pulling back, and saying, let's consider what we are saying and where we're going with this, right?
It's not, you can call it unique, you can call it ironic, actually it's proper. You look at the Ten Commandments, Commandments 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10, the second table of the law, all deal with this subject.
Oh, sure. How do we interact with people?
And how we treat others. And so that brings up, you know, in my mind, as we're trying to parse through this, what does the Bible say about racism? It actually starts out with the second command, with the second table of the law, love your neighbor as yourself. And as the Pharisee once asked, out of arrogance, once asked Jesus, and who is my neighbor? What did Jesus do? He went and told the parable about the Good Samaritan.
Right.
Which, not ironically, dealt with racism in Jewish society. And Jesus used as the hero of the parable, the one who was really, was the racist prejudice was, were against.
Right. The ones that the rest of the Jewish community thought were useless and should be avoided.
Yes.
The one who comes in and does the actual thing that is the best, right? For his fellow man.
And so to answer that question that Jesus gave, who is my neighbor? Every single human being, not only whom I come into contact with, but every single human being is my neighbor.
Well, absolutely.
And I am to love them as I love myself.
Well, and you use that idea of the law, you know, the second table of the law really sums up loving our neighbor as ourself. And I think what we have here is a problem that is in many ways God's God's when the Ten Commandments finally come out in the book of Exodus, and we have it written finally in stone, not just upon the heart, we have the codification in many ways of this is how you should have been this entire time, even before the Ten Commandments are given, and this is how you should be the entire time after the Ten Commandments are given. I mean, we have the this is the perfect law. This is the holy of holy laws. And what we see in, and I just want to go back a little bit further, and this brings us to one of the points that we wanted to discuss today. I want to bring us back to really where we have this division of culture. And we call it the division of races. We can call it the division of nations. I personally like this division of culture. This idea that there's a divide now in culture, and we go back to the book of Genesis, right? We go back to chapter 11, and many people have, if you're in your Bibles, NIV, I think, had the Tower of Babel. I think that was their title at one time. KJV had something similar at one time. But we all know the story. We all know the story of the Tower of Babel, and this idea of what happens at the Tower of Babel is not a separation of color, but it's a separation of culture. And I honestly think that we have this beginning of this split in culture.
Explain that. Take us through that quote. It show us in the biblical account on how it's not a separation of races, but of cultures.
Well, okay, let's just start from the beginning, shall we? We'll start at verse 1, chapter 11 of Genesis. The whole earth had one language and a single vocabulary. So right now there's a unification of communication, right? There's a unification of communication. People know how to talk to other people. They have the same words. They're not fumbling over what does this mean to you? What does this mean to me? There's an understanding that's going on here. Verse 2, as people traveled in the east, they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they settled there. They said to one another, come, let us make bricks and bake them thoroughly. They used mud bricks instead of stone for building materials. They used tar for mortar. They said, come, let's build a city for ourselves. And they used a tower whose top reaches to the sky. And let's make a name for ourselves so that we will not be scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth. And so you have here this difference of, and this is where it begins. This is where it begins. And you see, we have this unification of language. You see, we have a unification of vocabulary. We have a mixing pot, a melding pot of, at this time, everybody. The Lord does not say there's a specific color. Hey, this person is more light in melanin. This person is darker in melanin. It is everybody. Everybody is there. So you have the full spectrum of people. And now each of them want to make a name for themselves. And they have maybe one person who stands up and says, let's do this, and they get everybody behind them, but whose name are they going to put forward?
Their own.
Exactly. This is a cultural thing that's starting here in Babylon, or in Babel. We have this idea of everybody's speaking the same thing, everybody's doing the same thing. It's not about the color, it's not about what they look like, it's about their sinful nature that says, I deserve to have my name. I deserve to have to make a name for myself,
They're not saying let's make a name for us as a whole.
Right.
Let's make a name for us as individuals.
That's where you have it, for ourselves, not for us. Let's make a name for us as a people, but for ourselves.
For us as individuals.
Yes, and so this is a cultural thing that starts here in Babel. And what do they do? They do just like what we're doing today, right? They do band together to put forward an effort. But when the Lord comes down and he sees it, he says, you know, this is not an effort that is praiseworthy. This is an effort that is internally bound. This is an effort that really is going to lead them closer and closer every step to hell than it is to glory and to heaven. And if you want to finish up and just read it, you know, we'll look at it. And look at, they want to make a name for themselves, and they have a tower that reached the sky, so that we will not be scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth. The idea is we want to make a name for ourselves. We each want to be the kings of our own world, but we're too afraid to do what God commanded to do in the first place, which was to go and spread out, right? To go and move away from this nucleus, this idea. Of course, we go on. The Lord comes down to see the city, the tower that the people were building. The Lord said, if this is the first thing they are doing as one people who all have one language, then nothing that they intend to do will be too difficult for them. Come, let's go down there, confuse their language so that they cannot understand one another's speech. And this is where it begins, right? The Lord protects our stupidity by confusing us so that we can't communicate and we can't share some of these thoughts with one another that are hurtful and that are so damaging. And we see that happening here. In this whole idea of the Tower of Babel, we see the Lord protecting, right? We see the Lord protecting this humanity, this sinful people, preparing them for good and wholesome words that will transcend the language. And we're going to see that in Pentecost.
And how does this relate, Will, as we look at this? Because I look at this too, where with God, this is a disobedience to God's command. With the second command, a reiteration of what happened, of the command God gave to Adam and to Eve, and reiterated through Noah and his family after the ark, fill the earth and subdue it.
Right.
And so again, this was direct disobedience to that command. They didn't want to do that.
Well, and that's, yes, it's the direct disobedience to the command of not spreading out, but it's also the sinful nature playing out with you have everybody in one accord, everyone bidding for themselves, and they all understand what's going on and they can share that and it's infectious.
Yep. Well, and it's let us remake ourselves in our own image. Let's replace God. Let's replace God with us.
Right. Right.
Which you see a lot of this today too, because again, isn't all sin violation against every single one of the commandments is basically when we violate saying, okay, God, I know better than you.
Right.
Okay, God, I'm smarter than you.
Or I am God and I am God yes. myself. I am my own God, yes. right? I am my yes. own controller.
And that is, that is the biggest form of idolatry on the planet.
It is. And you're absolutely correct. And here is where I think we have this, the initial start. If you want to call it racism, fine. This is where racism begins, right here at the Tower of Babel. And it's not, I'm not blaming God on it. I'm blaming ourselves because we each tried to do things ourselves. We wanted to make a name for ourselves.
Yes. And thank you brought that up. It's not, God is not to blame because the racism started before the dispersion.
Yes, the racism started when we each looked at each other and said, I know better, and I'm going to force my will yes. and my opinion on you. And we're going to come together in the short term, but then I'm going to take credit for it.
Yep.
And that's exactly what it is. And that's what we see today, right? You know, I'm kind of an historian. I love ancient history. I'm not a huge American history buff, but I love ancient history. And you know, the old idiom that's always been said about history is written by the winners of wars. And it's true. The culture that wins the war, whenever you have a conflict of culture, the culture that wins the war is the culture that defines what history says.
Can I lead us in a direction from that? I think it's a question that may come up in some of our listeners' minds, and if it has, I apologize that you have a warped brain like I do. But you know, does this, you know, with this, you look at, I see so many people on Twitter, on Facebook, on other forms of social media, and these are, let's put it this way, this is discussion that's going on today, and people are afraid that with some of the protests, that our history is being erased. I think there's something that applies this year too. I am a fan of American history. I consider myself a devotee of it. Yet at the same time, it is something we learn from the beginning. History is written by the victors. And that is something too. It's kind of like, maybe let's quote one of our favorite Wisconsin Synod professors, Dan Deutschlander. The narrow Lutheran middle is always appropriate, and there's probably a lot of that comes to bear here too.
And absolutely, I think this is one of the things that we have to take into consideration. You know, for the greater part of almost 300 years, the United States has been the winner of wars, many wars, and we have written the narrative. Good, bad, or indifferent, we have written the narrative. But even we have written the narrative within our own country. Because if you look at it, and let's just go back to the founding of our country, all right? We'll just go back to the war for independence from Britain. Now, if you were British and you were over here fighting, were the colonies right?
No.
Now, if you were a colonist and you were fighting Britain, were you right?
Yes.
And if Britain would have won, who would have been written in history as right?
Britain. And you see that bear out in with the great British Empire and places where Britain did. They were the great bringer of right.
Right.
Something else also that they have gone through this process in their own country, so to speak. As the British Empire has been dismantled.
Absolutely. And here is one of the things let's walk forward. Let's just walk forward a little bit. Go to the Civil War. Okay? Now, you're talking about the Civil War. Good, bad, or indifferent, let's just lay out the facts of the Civil War. You had the South versus the North. The North predominantly did not have slave ownership. We were more industrial. The South predominantly had more slave ownership, right? That was a cultural thing. That was a cultural thing. And you have this divide, right?
And be clear on the cultural thing. By calling it a cultural thing, we're not putting a stamp of approval on it.
Absolutely not. I'm not saying it was a good thing. I'm saying it was a cultural thing.
No, I know you're not. I want our listeners to be clear that we're not saying that we're putting a stamp of approval on it.
And I'm not saying one culture is right over another culture, because then that leads into this whole idea of cultural racism that exists.
Yeah.
I'm not saying one culture is better. I'm saying this is the fact. They had two cultures that were colliding together. Okay? So in the Civil War, who won?
The North.
So who wrote the narrative?
The North.
Exactly. So the North writes the narrative, and now everything is shadowed and shaded under that idea of the things that they upheld. Now, if the South would have won, how would that narrative have changed?
It would have been a polar opposite.
Absolutely. So the winners of these wars are the ones who are writing this narrative. Now, what we as a culture, as we're coming and we're fast-forwarding our way through history, we as a culture have to recognize, if we are truly the melding pot that we say we are in the United States, we have to realize that the United States is not just one culture. There is no such thing as a United States culture. It doesn't exist. There is European culture. There is African American culture. There is Asian culture. There is Native American culture. There is Hispanic culture. There are some flavors of French culture. I mean, we are just the Irish culture, however you want to say it. There's this melding pot of culture, right, that exists within what we call the framework of the United States. And what we need to recognize is that because we are a melding pot of cultures, we can't be throwing stones. We can't be throwing stones and saying one culture is better than the other, because even in the United States, we don't have a culture. There is no culture in the United States.
There is the myth of an American culture.
Bingo. That is what it is. It's a myth that we've said, because we have won the wars, because we have fought these battles, because we have done these things, we therefore have a culture. We don't.
Can I ask you a question? Is where, you know, because I think, look, we have a difference of culture between right now. I mean, and we see it. If you just want to put it in this way, and not wanting to get political about it, but you look at a political map of the United States and you see the blue counties and the red counties,
sure,
right there. How much of that comes about because, you know, you look in the bigger cities, those are cultural melting pots.
They are predominantly
more so than our own areas here or than in the area that I'm in. And so that's why that's a reason why there's probably more discussion, more debate, in those areas, not right, wrong, or indifferent, not making a judgment on that, but there tends to be more discussion because there is more cultural diversity.
Absolutely. And let's just take a playbook out of the world at large. Go over to Europe and you wonder why they have such conversations, cultural conversations that we never partake in the United States. And the reason is in Europe, you have nations who are culturally diverse, so close together that if they don't have those conversations, they would be exploding like we're exploding every day between these nations. But coming back to where you were saying though, this is part of the idea. You know, I am where I serve in the upper part of Wisconsin. By and large, culturally, we are more agricultural. So we have an agricultural culture. People that live here, work here, they understand farming. They work within farming. It's not an unusual thing to see farm trucks go down the road. There's an idea of hard work. There's an idea of waking up early in the morning, doing what needs to be done, and going to bed late at night because you put in a good day's work. Same thing out in South Dakota, right? Where,
yes,
you know, that's kind of the thing. You go out, you do this work, you don't have time to be messing around and worrying about it because you got stuff to do at home. And then you come in and you may have coffees with the guys and you may play some cards and go back out to work. Now, in the inner cities, in the bigger cities, you don't have that separation, right? We are by and large in our smaller communities, one culture. That's kind of our culture. There's some blue collar stuff going on. I get it. But by and large, we are one culture. You get into the cities, like you said, you have the blue collar, you have the white collar.
You have immigrants.
Yep.
And then actually in South Dakota, just because this is something that's appropriate here, South Dakota, rural South Dakota is getting a taste of cultural integration, and so to speak. Mitchell, which it's one of the bigger cities in South Dakota, but in the grand scheme of things, it's a rural community. Urine, a rural community. Two of the bigger cities in rural South Dakota, central South Dakota, but yet two cities where the people and there's tension with the people in those two communities because they're getting Somalis, they're getting Czechs, they're getting, you know, all sorts of different races, nationalities and cultures coming in, and the longtime residents there are panicking over it.
Right. And now here's where you have the problem, right? The problem is not because someone moved in who has a different melanin, darker skin than I do. The problem is somebody moved in next door who lives by a different set of rules because they are culturally different. What we have done, and this is something I'm not saying we want to jump in and have a huge conversation about it today. We could talk about it at another time, and we have talked about it a little bit. One of the things that our society has done, and they've done it through the public schools, that has been a disservice, I believe, to our nation, is that they have allowed those cultural things to integrate into the school. Instead of teaching the core reading, writing, and arithmetic, and teaching our kids what they need so that they can go out and be productive in society, we've started to say, you have to learn about all these cultural things. I'm sorry, there's no place for that. I'm not saying that their culture is wrong. I'm not saying that they shouldn't have their culture, but I shouldn't have to learn it. And they shouldn't have to learn mine if they don't want to. That's what I'm, and see, this is where when we start butting them up against each other, and we start saying that now you have to integrate into their culture, we start having these issues.
So let me, I just want to clarify what you're saying here, and I don't want to speak for you. This is what I'm hearing. And that what you're not saying is that their cultures aren't important. It isn't important. It isn't that it's not important to know what their cultures are saying. It shouldn't be forced upon us. It should be up to the individual to decide this is what to find out more about that culture.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, to give you an example here, I've been to the state of Hawaii twice. First time went there for a wedding and was there more as a tourist. Second time I went, which was really my favorite time visiting, I didn't go as a tourist. I went there to visit some friends, stayed with them, spent 2 weeks there, and actually got to see a side of the Hawaiian people that I didn't see before. As a person who came and actually I asked them questions about their culture, listened, learned a lot about their history and their culture, which I really appreciated, to see how one-on-one interaction actually brought two cultural groups together. Or two individuals from different cultures together. That's where it starts. And it's got to come because one wants to, not because it's forced. And that's what you're saying.
Absolutely. And I'm saying it from both sides. I'm saying that I cannot force. I mean, I am, by my culture, by your culture too, I am predominantly English, German, and Irish. That's my culture. My culture comes from very, very much light melanin, European cultural background. Now, just because I come from a Germanic culture or I come from that European culture, do I think that it's right for me to say, okay, everybody who doesn't come from that culture has to learn only about my culture? I don't say that at all. I don't think that's right either. But then again, you know, if you want to be well-rounded, you should want to learn about everybody's culture.
So you're taking a new. I'm gonna throw a little bit of gasoline on the spark here, but it does fit. So what you're saying is that people need to, that Christians need to stop saying if you come to this country you need to learn English.
I think that that's a really good spark, by the way.
Yeah. Hey, you know what?
No, here's, you know, when we started as a nation, and you go back into history, we had, and I know this word can carry a lot of baggage, and I don't mean it to carry the baggage, but the word ghetto used to have, and I'm not using the word as like, okay, lower slums, bad part. What I'm saying is ghetto in the sense of, you had Polish ghettos, you had Irish ghettos, you had German ghettos, you had English ghettos. You had places where the predominant people who were immigrating to this country gathered as a people, and
they were drawn to their own culture.
Right, they were drawn to their own culture. They were drawn to their own styles, their own thing. They had their own way of building, their own way of speaking, and in that area, they engaged in their speech from their homeland. In the Lutheran Church, predominantly German, Bohemian, when it came over here in the United States for the longest time, what was the culture of the church in the Lutheran Church?
Well, they only spoke the German language.
Bingo. So that was it. Now, did they speak the German language outside?
Some did.
At home. But when they were working, they spoke the language of the nation in which they lived.
Let's be For the greater part, yes, you are correct on that. You know, there were some, I can tell you, growing up in the 60s and in the 70s, that I had some relatives of my grandmother who were her age that still only spoke German. They didn't speak a word of English. You know, there were some, but for the most part, our the people of our German heritage, when they came over here, nobody wants to learn a new language, but because they were in a new country, because they wanted to get along, because they wanted to be successful, they realized it helps for me to be bilingual.
Bingo. And here's the thing. Go to Europe, almost everyone's bilingual. Because they're so close together to do business in, like, for a German to do business in France, they got to know French.
And here, throwing a little bit more gasoline on the spark, why is it that usually it's our culture that says to our neighbors to the south that migrate here, learn English and what we're saying is be bilingual, and we're not.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. Having been forced to learn Latin, German, and Greek and Hebrew, I can tell you, and I can tell you exactly, I understand what the Lord is doing when he confused the languages at the Tower of Babel. Because what he did is he confused the language of the Tower of Babel, and he mixes up these cultural differences. He is now forcing people in a more focused way to follow the second commandment. Because as you learn someone's language, you learn their culture and you understand them better. And that is a part of the second commandment, or that whole part of the second table. Right. The second table of the law. The whole part of the, and this is coming back to our lesson, right? Coming back to where our focus is. We had all these different cultural faux pas going on in this whole thing around the Tower of Babel. The Lord splits them apart according to languages. Now they are in their languages, and now there's a disconnect, and people who truly want to get to know people, which I think is vitally important, spent the time to learn the other's language so they could communicate.
You brought up a point when we were in school, and one of the things that we really learn well, even if we don't master the language at an A level, is that we learn about the culture of that language, because culture determines how people speak
and think.
Yes. And so as you learn the language, you start learning how that culture thinks.
Yes. And you learn why they put things together in the way that they put things together. Yeah. And then you become able to understand why it was phrased this way, or why it hasn't been, or why you act that way.
And so, you know, it bringing us back a little bit in the circle. You mentioned how other, like European countries and other nations, you have these people are bilingual, and actually often more than just knowing two languages. It's often more. We're not slamming our country. We're not slamming the United States of America. What we're saying is, and this is with all of us, we can always do better.
Absolutely. And I think our differences that we have in this country are cultural, not color. And I think this is the important thing that I really wanted to say. You know, my brothers and sisters in Christ who are African American, Asian American, Native American, they're my brothers and sisters in Christ, and I am happy to have them with me, and I will see them in heaven. There are cultural differences, though, and I'll be the first to say I don't know every single culture. I don't. Yeah. I have not had the opportunity to be involved and interact with every single person in every single culture. I just haven't. But that doesn't mean that I can't learn. And that doesn't mean that I should be unwilling to learn. And I think what we see in our history today, and it comes back down to this, we have sinful people who do sinful things. And as they write the history as the victors of wars, they frame it in their own image, just as sinful people always do. And we always color things that we don't understand as bad, and we highlight things that we embrace as good, and the behaviors that we condone become the cherished gold marker for everything, and the things that we don't condone or don't understand or don't quite can't quite wrap our mind around, we throw to the side and say that's bad, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the difference comes in, and this is where I think we want to go with this, is that, yeah, all these cultural differences exist, but there is one thing that brings us together, and there can only be one thing that brings us together, because, be honest with you, and I know you feel the same way, I will never fully, even if I'm given an opportunity, I will never fully amalgamate into an African-American culture. I won't. Not because I might not want to, not because I might not try to, it's because I just won't. I was never raised that way. I was raised in a different culture, and so it won't be my main culture that I would turn to.
But don't say won't, say it's highly unlikely.
And that's maybe a better way of saying it.
Because as a pastor, you and I well know too that that, and I found this out in my ministry a long time ago, the minute I say I won't do something, the Lord says, hey, guess what? I'm going to give you a taste of it and give you more of a more than just a taste of it. You could find yourself in the midst of a ministry, of a multicultural ministry or a different culture ministry.
Absolutely.
Very easily.
And I think you're right. It's highly unlikely. It's highly unlikely. But that being said, And then we can bring this up as we lead towards our next little thought. But look at Pentecost, right? Look at Pentecost. You had these people, when you go into Acts chapter 2, you have all of these people from all over the known world, right? All over the known world. And culturally, they have come as a multicultural group to worship in Jerusalem at a temple to God.
Explain how they got multicultural too.
Well, they got multicultural because First Kings, right? First Kings, as Solomon is dedicating the temple in what is that? First Kings 8? Yeah, First Kings 8. As he's dedicating the temple, he's reminding the people and praying to the Lord that this temple is not just for the Jews, but this is for every nation. That God, the triune God, Father, Son, Holy Spirit, is not just for one cultural people, but it's for all cultures, for all people, for all time. And he says in his dedication, as he's praying to the Lord, he says, anybody who comes to you, listen to them. Any culture who comes to you, and he calls them a foreigner, anybody who comes to you, listen to them. And as the people of Israel heard that was a mission mind, right? And not everybody did it, and we know that because people are sinners, but there were so many that brought their faith and lived their faith amongst other cultures.
And take it the next step on how they got there. It wasn't long, well, it was probably a couple hundred years after King Solomon, actually, probably, you know, four or five centuries, maybe a little bit more, that Solomon's temple was destroyed. God's people were carried off into captivity.
Call it what it is. Call it what it is. Slavery.
Slavery.
Yeah.
But they were dispersed, taken away from their nation, hundreds of miles away, and spread. And then when God finally delivered them around 700 AD, or 700 BC, sorry, some stayed.
Yep.
Not everybody came back. And then you see it was many of those people that stayed in those areas at the time of Pentecost, which came 700 years later. They came back. They had become mixed in the other cultures. And also they shared the faith of the one true God.
Absolutely. And they came and they worshiped. And notice what the Lord does. Notice what the Lord does. The Lord gives on Pentecost, as a gift of the Holy Spirit, he gives the apostles a gift to speak. And notice the words. If you go to Acts chapter 2, the one of the beautiful words that are given there is, we heard them speaking in our heart language. That's what it means to have a native our heart language, the native language. We heard them speaking in the language that we would speak with our moms and with our dads. The language that we would speak if we were at home around the kitchen table. That's the words, that's the language we heard them speaking in. That they were crossing a cultural divide that back at the Tower of Babel had split everything. And now the cultural divide, and notice, what did they hear? The glory and the miracles and the wonders of God played out for them in life. They heard
in their
about
own
Jesus
heart
Christ.
Language.
Yeah. They heard Jesus Christ. They heard of Jesus Christ for them. And so you want to know what transcends culture? What transcends all culture is a Jewish baby born in Bethlehem from a virgin mother who is true God and true man, but yet very Jewish, and who lived under the Jewish law that is for all people, that law that says the do's and the don'ts of how we should live our life, and he lived it perfectly for us. And then he took on all of the sins of everybody, of every culture, of every color and shade of skin, and he took it into himself, and he died. And he proclaimed that it is finished. He did not say, you know what, okay, only for the Jews, all of you are free, you're good. He didn't say, oh, hey, only the Gentiles. He said, no, everybody, it's done.
Yep.
And that is what crosses this cultural divide. Jesus is not cultural. Jesus isn't a European cultural religion. Jesus isn't a Jewish cultural religion. Jesus isn't just for the Native Americans or just for the African Americans or just for the Caucasians or the Europeans. Jesus is for everybody. For everybody. That's some of the things that we forget, is that the things that truly divide us, yes, culture, but religion. And there's only two. One that says, I am God, so get out of my way. And the other one that says and recognizes, Jesus Christ is the only Lord and Savior. And I will follow him because I've been changed through the Spirit to follow him. And that's it. And if you are the one side where you're thinking I am God and that you have every right to do these things, then the world becomes a very dark place. And the world becomes a dark place where everyone's out to get you and everyone's out to fight you and everyone's out to enforce their rules over you. And then if you live in the world where Christ reigns, you live in the world where you are forgiven and where your life is found in his death and his resurrection, I have heaven, and the world is always going to be against me because they were against him.
And a little side note, but still sticking to the point, just fleshing this out here in this short time has helped me to understand why our synod in the past 30 years has really, really emphasized multicultural and other cultural ministries.
Because it's important.
Yes.
It's very, very important. And please, dear listener, you know, this is a charged topic. I know. You can't go anywhere today without hearing about this topic. And we're not trying to rile anybody up unduly. We're not trying to say you have to do this over that. But what we are trying to say is this idea of racism stems from our own sinful nature. It does not come from the scriptures. It doesn't. The idea of racism doesn't come from the scriptures. And I know, and we sort of talked about this in the beginning of our, before our show started, and we'll just bring it up very, very loosely here, and we can expound upon it at a later date. Some of you may be thinking, but the Jews, they went into the Holy Land and they eradicated everybody. They didn't do that because they just said we're better. They did that because their Lord said to do this because there was a cultural and religious difference that would not be changed, right? That the religious aspect of those people would never change and it would bring his people down. It wasn't something that they said, hey, we're going to go in and do this. In fact, you
and
I...
Also keep in mind that that the Israelites did not fully keep God's command, and it caused problems for them up to the time of Jesus.
Absolutely, because they didn't do what the Lord had said, and they fell away because of it, and were led astray because of it. So I think, I don't know about you, there's so much more to talk about in this conversation, and I want to get more into the New Testament and talk about how Jesus interacts with the different cultures that he was dealing with. So I want to revisit the Good Samaritan. I want to revisit Pentecost. I want to revisit Peter in the book of Acts and his dream.
Yes. And keep in mind, you see it in all of the epistles. I mean, you see it. Paul's letter, you see it with Paul's letter to the Romans, the Corinthians, the Philippians. You see it even with Philemon, which deals with the subject of slavery. You got Peter in his epistles to those he wrote, James. These congregations were, and every single one of the congregations, oh wow, was multicultural.
Exactly. And I want to get there. Today, we sort of just hit the Old Testament framework and sort of had a brief introduction to where this all started and maybe had a good chance for our own listeners to maybe get in contact with us and say, hey, could you flesh out for us? I had a question about...
Questions from our listeners would be appreciated to guide us as we move forward on this topic in the future and as we continue to flesh this out.
Absolutely. And so we're opening it up. You know, bring it to us within the congregation. Bring it to us as we have an opportunity to gather with our members. Email, bingo. Have it in writing so we can actually read it and remember it and say, this is a comment. But again...
And I'm sure that our beloved listener, Gary... probably has a few questions on this to help guide us too.
And I direct you to your vacancy pastor so that you can bring that up to him. But dear listener, this is just the beginning of the conversation and we want to try to hit all the bases, but we want to do it knowing that we're all sinners and we're not perfect and we're never going to be on this side of heaven. But Christ is perfect. He has lived for us. He's lived for you. He's died for me. He's died for you. And in him, we have life that transcends this mess.
As we finish up, and maybe it'll be something that we transition into with our next podcast on this, I can't help but think about words of the Apostle Paul, where he says, I have become all things to all men so that I might save some. And I know that's not an accurate translation. It's more of a summary, but this really is the heart of Christian faith. The attempt to be all things to all people, and what that means is listening, learning, not just talking. But listening and learning where people are come from, because the more we understand each other, the better avenue there is for sharing the gospel both ways.
And I would like to highlight the idea of listening, because
yes,
our culture today, all cultures, not just one against the other, all cultures today have lost that ability to listen. They talk a lot. But as soon as someone else says something, they instantly shut them down. We've lost the ability to listen and to talk. And so let's, you know, we really want to highlight that idea of listening so that we can share.
And so on that highlight there, Pastor Harley, I'm tired of hearing you talk.
Well, with that, there you go. Well, I'm not listening to you anyway. And dear listener, God's blessings as we continue the conversation next week.